Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I believe that's Ezra's new theme song, even though he's not here, but I think we should institute that. This segment is brought to you by the good people at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're looking for a place to do a fundraising event, Rumors Comedy Club is your destination. Be sure to head there, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're joined by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pat, let's start with the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, the interim head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. That's Randy Cunnyworth. Is there any reason at all to believe that at the end of the year he won't be a very short-time head coach of the Montreal Canadiens?
There's no reason at all. I'm not sure exactly what his future holds. I know that he definitely won't be back as the coach of the Canadiens, head coach of the Canadiens. Now, you know, whether he stays on as an assistant, I think he still has some time left on his contract as an assistant coach, and he might be kept on depending on who the new head coach is. But I think there's no chance at all of him becoming the head coach.
Pat, that shift is kind of rare. I think Tony Granato did it from head coach to assistant coach. Do you see him sticking with the organization, or do you think it's kind of a clean break?
I would think that it's probably a clean break. You know, as you say, you don't see too many guys, you know, make that downward move. One of the things interesting, back in 1971, they had Al McNeil was the head coach, and he wasn't, he didn't figure in their plans for much the same reason that Randy Cunnyworth isn't going to be around. He didn't speak any French. He had some friction with some of the French players on the team, including Henri Richard, who called him the worst coach ever. And he won a Stanley Cup, but he was sent packing at the end of that season.
Pat, you know, speaking French obviously isn't a guarantee for success, and Pierre Gauthier has certainly proven that, in my opinion. What's his future, and are Pierre Gauthier and Randy Cunnyworth somewhat tied together?
Well, they're tied together, in the fact that they both were in the Ottawa organization at one time or another. I'm not sure whether it was Jacques Martin or Pierre Gauthier brought Cunnyworth into the organization this time around. They hired him last year to coach the Hamilton team, so I assume there was probably a decision made by Gauthier. Gauthier is going to be gone at the end of the season, but I don't think it has anything to do with Randy Cunnyworth. I think he's going to be gone on his own merit.
Pat, if he's going to be gone, and we're going to get into this in a second here, we're going to get into some of the trade candidates the team has, but if he's going to be gone, why allow him then to orchestrate the trades for the team's future?
Well, I think what happens now is they're not really trading to get anything for the future. They're trading to dump guys to get something for guys that are going to be gone anyway. You know, the guys that are going to be traded are going to be Travis Moan, Hal Gill, possibly Andre Kostitsyn. And these guys are all going to be unrestricted free agents, and they're just trying to get whatever they can. So, it's not like they're going to get players that are going to, with contracts that they're going to have to worry about in the future. And so I think, the rationale there is, let's just get this done and then move on.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette. Pat, you mentioned both Travis Moan and Andre Kostitsyn. Any chance at all that either of those players get re-signed either before the trade deadline or in the summer? Or are they both goners from Montreal in your perspective?
Well, I think that, there's a, that if you were going to keep somebody, the guy I would keep would be Moan. And I think that, I think one of the guys is going to be the most sought after among, the free agents that are available on the roster. So I know that I was talking to someone earlier today who said there was a lot of interest in teams in the Western Conference that were interested in acquiring his services. And he's going to have a career season this year if he gets back. Now, he's hurt right now, and that might affect whether they can trade him or not. I know he was going for tests the other day. I haven't heard any results from those tests, but there's a possibility that when the trading deadline comes up that he's hurt and may not come back this season, in which case it'll be difficult to move him.
Pat, Hal Gill, a guy who's obviously great on the penalty kill, a shot blocker, a really solid stay-at-home defenseman, good in the room by all indications. What do you see the market like for him, and is he also basically a guaranteed goner from Montreal?
Yeah, I think he's guaranteed. I think about keeping both of these guys, and you just mentioned all the reasons that you want to keep Gill because he is good on the penalty kill, which is number one in the league. One of the interesting stats is that I think they faced over 13 5-on-3 situations this year, and they've only been scored on once.
Wow.
And the thing that was interesting was that one time they got scored on, Hal Gill was in the penalty box. But he's very limited in what he can do. And a team that picks him up will pick him up for his leadership qualities and the fact that he will help a bad penalty killing situation get better. One of the problems is, when you get into a situation where, he's got to play 20, 22 minutes, he just can't do that.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette. Pat, sticking with the back end, you have three sort of the youth on the Canadiens' back end is PK Subban, Rafael Diaz, and Alexei Yemelin. Can you talk at all about their progression throughout this season? Of course, Subban is the best known of those three players.
Well, Subban has progressed defensively. His offensive numbers are down. I think one of the things he made a conscious effort. To become better defensively. He still has some maturity issues. He has a habit of taking bad penalties. The reputation around the league is he likes to slew foot guys, and that's not going to that's not going to make him popular among other teams. And referees are starting to look for it. He had pulled one on Ville Leno last week and got a $2,500 fine for it. Next time it happens, it's going to be a suspension. So he has to walk a pretty thin line there and try to stay out of trouble. It's obvious that, this guy has so much talent. It's just a question of channeling it, getting going the right direction. And, they've re-signed Josh Georges for a few years, and I think that makes a pretty good pair. Whether they're a number one pair compared to some of the other teams around the league, but they're certainly top four defensemen. The other two guys have been a revelation this year. They've been trying to get Yemelin for about 6 or 7 years since they drafted him. He played in the Continental Hockey League and back in Russia. They finally got him this year, and he's pretty much what they expected. He's a very physical player. He leads the team in hits. He blocks shots. He's still adjusting to the North American style, but he's made a pretty good transition. The guy who's been the big surprise was Rafael Diaz. He's 25 years old, played in Switzerland, and they thought that he was going to spend most of this year in Hamilton getting used to the North American ice, but he's made an incredible transition, and he's been one of their most dependable defensemen. He has a little bit of an offensive capability, but just basically a pretty solid guy. Not very big, but very much in the Mark Strait category. Mm-hmm. Although what they've done is they've given him far more opportunities to play defense than they did with Strait, who didn't really turn into a really good defenseman. Didn't get a chance to show his defensive skills until he moved to Long Island.
With regard to Alexei Yemelin, is there any fear in the organization that if he doesn't get the contract that he wants as an RFA, he would flee back to the KHL?
I think he's settling into North America. I think he feels his future is here. And I think that, I think the KHL is going to become less of a factor in the next couple of years. I think that plane crash was a wake-up call for a lot of players. I think that the financial trouble that some of the teams are in over there has got some players concerned. And I think Alexei Yemelin understands that his future is here in North America. And he's working hard to fit in and develop. There's all sorts of questions about, as far as money. And he'll get a decent contract, and I think that he'll be happy with what he gets.
Pat, Scott Gomez is a contract that's obviously been a huge albatross, basically since being acquired from the New York Rangers by Bob Gainey. two more years after this season at $7.3 million cap hit per year. No team, as far as I can tell, would ever go anywhere near that contract. Is the team, maybe the management and maybe ownership, are they considering putting him in the minors and getting the cap reprieve?
Well, there's a couple of different scenarios there. You know, to say that no team would touch him is, he becomes attractive to some teams next year. Of course, what we don't know is we don't know what the new CBA is going to hold. We don't know what it means in terms of salary cap, whether it's going to be a floor, whether the floor is going to remain the same, whether it's going to go up along with the upper level. And if the floor goes up and the cap goes up, then Scott Gomez becomes a little more attractive because he only makes $5 million next year and $4 million next year, $4 million the year after that. So if you're a team that's trying to reach the floor, you can get a player who's a pretty decent NHL player, despite all his recent problems, and you can pay him $5 million and get a $7.3 million cap hit. The next year you pay him $4 million and still get the cap hit. So, you can save some cash and, get a player who you hope a change in scenery will help. Now, the other scenarios are, if you put them in the minors, that they could do that. They haven't shown any inclination in doing that thus far. The other possibility is they could buy them out. I would say that's more likely than putting them in the minors.
Tomorrow marks 1 year to the day since his last NHL goal.
Right.
So, that's insane. But, the real big RFA for the Habs this coming offseason is goaltender Carey Price. Any word at all on how contract negotiations are progressing there, if they have even begun?
I don't think they've even begun. I don't think there's any urgency. I think that might be something that the new general manager, whoever it might be, will be asked to handle. As I said, this team is generally shied away from re-signing guys during the season. Now, they made an exception last month for Josh Georges, signed him to a long-term contract, and got that out of the way. There might be some talks going on with Price, but I think that they want to wait until the end of the season, because right now his value, may not, by the end of the season, his value may not be what it was going into the season. If he had signed the end of last season, he was in good position because he was in the top 10, top 5 in a lot of the goaltending category, goals against average, save percentage, wins, and shutouts. I think he was in the top 5 in 3 of those 4 categories, top 10 in all of them. But he's not anywhere near those numbers this year. And there's some rumblings that he hasn't stolen any games this year, and that's a concern. But, I think that, he'll get a decent contract, but it might be in his best interest not to go for a long-term deal, to bring himself up to the UFA deadline and then go from there and hope that his numbers get better.
Final question here, Pat, then we'll let you go. Louis LeBlanc, I was at the draft, actually, in 2009 in Montreal. The place went crazy and then completely emptied out after the Habs chose Louis LeBlanc. How is the team, what are the team's thoughts on his progression, and maybe what do they see as a possible ceiling for him moving forward?
They're pretty happy with him. Right now they're trying to figure out where eventually he'll play. I mean, he's been a natural center for most of his career. Mm-hmm. He's been playing at the wing this year. He's back up with Montreal playing center. And, I have a feeling they might keep him around for the rest of the season and just to give him more of a taste, give him a little more time, a little more responsibility. They're pretty happy with his progress so far. He had missed training camp because of a shoulder surgery during the offseason. Had a slow start, but he's come along pretty well. I think he's projected, either as a top six forward as a winger, or possibly as a center going, when Thomas Plekanec, is finished with his career. Or right now it's an interesting position that they have at center, because you would like to get more ice time for Lars Eller. But right now, your top two centers are Plekanec, who's not having a great year, but he's still, one of your more valuable players in the versatility. He can play on a power play, plays with penalties, kills penalties, and, is one of your better face-off guys. Then you got David Dejarne, who's been a great revelation. I think he's the third leading scorer on the team now. And, you know, game in and game out just gives you, a lot of effort and fight. And he's found some chemistry with Max Pacioretty and Eric Cole. So there's really no room right now for LeBlanc to show what he can do on one of those top lines as a center. And I think eventually they'll try to find him a role as a winger.
Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the Habs-Caps game.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Pat. Take care. Thanks. Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. In case you were wondering, we think Pat Hickey was defusing a bomb in the middle of the interview, but we're not 100% sure what the beeping was. But anyways, that was Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, who we spoke to earlier this morning. And that was that maybe explains the beeping, but we're not 100% sure ourselves. It's a little odd, wasn't it, Richie?
Love Pat.
Pat's a great guest.
Great guest. It gives you a lot of insight. I don't know what was going on. I think he was trying to...
He was either making an ATM deposit or defusing a bomb.
That's true.
It can't be anything. It was only one of those two. That's all it could be.
But it was too continuous to have been an ATM deposit unless he's loading in the cash.
Well, maybe he has a number of different accounts transferring from one to the other.
Sure. Could have any accounts.
It's all possible. Anyways, this segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. The Cheer will be open early tomorrow at 12 noon for the Jets-Habs game, and they're also giving away a Winnipeg Jets jersey. So if you're looking for a place to watch the Jets-Habs game tomorrow...
I was talking about it last night.
If you're looking for a place to watch the Jets-Habs game, if you're looking for a place to watch the Super Bowl, that the Cheer Bar and Grill is a very good option. Also, so is Carbone. All sorts of places to watch the Super Bowl and the Jets games tomorrow. That is a big sports... Big Sunday of sports.
And Drew, forgot to mention, we'll be at the Cheer.
We'll be at the Cheer. You're absolutely right. I'll be here 10 a.m. till 12 noon tomorrow.
Yeah, I mentioned reasons to go.
So you're saying people will steer away from going there if they know that we're there? I'm insulted, Richie. You drew the crowd last night, from what I understand. You had them eating out of the palm of your hand as you did trivia and whatnot.
I did trivia. It's pretty good trivia.
Yeah?
Ezzy got criticized for his trivia the other day.
Ezzy's trivia was too hard.
Well, you know, first of all, I want to take responsibility. I gave him that question.
Ooh.
I thought it was a good question.
Tell the audience the question.
It was, who are the two all-stars from the Ice Caps?
Well, you know, that's a...
I think it would have been fair to ask for one of the two. I guess not everyone is familiar with Zach Redmond, I guess.
One of the two. Also, you got to factor in the fact, though, people are probably drinking at this point, so they might not be able as sharp as they usually are.
And the weirdest part was, Ezzy asked the question, didn't know the answer.
Also problematic when it comes to that. When Ezzy asks trivia questions, it has no idea what the answer is.
Let's talk NHL trade deadline, Drew. Now, we talked about the Jets trade and candidates last week.
Yeah.
Let's talk about overall the NHL.
That's a very reasonable thing to do. Of course, the NHL trade deadline coming up February 27th, Monday, February 27th. The Legal Curve will be on air from 12 noon to 4 o'clock that day.
Mm-hmm.
Special edition that's... right up, and of course the Jets play the Oilers that night, so it'll be an interesting... Usually they try not to have very many NHL games on the same night as the trade deadline.
Yeah.
I think it was either last year or 2 years ago, they actually changed the trade deadline day by 24 hours.
Yes, they did.
Because the schedule was a lot lighter the day before.
Mm-hmm.
But why they didn't plan that ahead of time, I can't possibly tell you. But anyways, trade deadline coming up in a few weeks. First name up on the block, you've been hearing his name really since the season went south in Columbus. Some might argue that the season went south before the season started in Columbus.
True.
Jeff Carter. He's got a long-term contract. That's saying something.
10-year deal. About 10 years left on the deal. He's a cap at a 5.2, Drew, so it's not a completely unreasonable cap. But the question is, I can say this. This perception around in terms of media seems to have obviously taken a huge hit, because last year, if you talked about Jeff Carter being available, there probably would have been a firestorm for him. This year, not so much. And I'm not so sure if that's perception or reality. In any event, there will be a market for him.
The question. I want to talk about Jeff Carter. I mean,
there will be a market for him, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a huge long contract. We know that. It's another 11 years.
Yep.
11 years, $58 million. So, you know, like you said, $5.2 million a year. We said earlier in the show, goal scorers don't grow on trees. It's the one thing you can't learn.
We also talked about it before in the summer. We talked about Carter playing with Nash and saying he's a goal scorer. He's not a passer. He can pass, but he's not a passer's player. He's a shoot-first player. Like, the combination doesn't really make too much sense, but let's talk about... Yeah, sorry, Drew.
So, I mean, if you're looking to get a 40-goal scorer, right? Because Jeff Carter, he's got potential to be a 40-goal scorer.
He scored 40 goals only once in his career, though. I think that's a little bit of a misnomer. He's a 40-goal scorer. Is he capable of it? Sure. Has he done it before? Sure. He's more of a 30 to 35-goal scorer.
Well, even then, how often do 30 to 35-goal scorers come around?
That's very true.
I mean...
He's got a very good shot. He's a good skater. He's big. He can win faceoffs. He can kill penalty. I mean, he's very versatile, Drew. He's pretty consistent. I mean, look at his goal totals since 2007-8, 29, 46, 33, 36, and obviously the bad year this year. But that's pretty good. I mean, again, Drew, you're exactly right. Those don't grow on trees. His playoff output hasn't been as good as his regular season output. But, I mean, we've heard rumblings that LA is interested here, rumblings Toronto's interested here, rumblings that Calgary's interested. Now, what are the pieces that you're willing to give up?
Well, 27 years old, so he's, I mean, you're going to have him until he's well into his late 30s.
Yes.
He's
not the most physical player, so I think his terms of a long-term
health
probably is a better outlook than a guy who plays a little more of a rugged game.
Sure. What would you give up to get a Jeff Carter? What do you think Columbus is looking for?
They're looking for what they gave up, which is a top 10 pick
and a young superstar.
Yeah, well, not a superstar.
Well, a young prospect. Yeah. I mean, Voracek was... Where did Columbus draft him?
I think he was 7th overall in the 2006 draft or 7th.
So you're looking for a top 10 pick?
Yeah.
Or somebody who has already been selected as a top 10 pick and a first-round pick?
Basically. Now, Voracek's ceiling is more of a second-line right winger, I think, ceiling. So if you're looking for that and a top-10 pick, first of all, well, can you get that? I mean, it really depends. I think that if you're in a team like Calgary, apparently, is interested. What are they going to give up? Another draft pick? Can they keep giving up draft picks? You know, what's their end game? I mean, you look at L.A., are you going to take the whole Flyers roster and put it right? You know, that's basically the core there, the party island that they talked about. And then Toronto.
But, for Toronto, all the criticism that the party island got... Yeah. Party Island was pretty talented.
Exactly. And then you look at Toronto. Well, he's not going to play with Kessel. Again, shoot for his players, really. But you need a big nine centerman. I mean, Grabowski, is he on his way out? We don't know. We're going to talk about him in a second. They have Bozak and they have other guys, but they don't have a number one guy. So there's going to be a market for him, guys. I don't think you're going to get a top 10 pick and really a top end prospect. I think maybe you're looking for a first round pick. Maybe a lesser player and another draft pick.
Can you see Columbus holding on to him?
Sure, because you can't sell him for nothing unless ownership has a mandate that you have to get rid of him because he's got a big salary. But this would be the same ownership that wanted him only a few months ago.
and gave what's-his-name a huge contract. Wisniewski.
Well, that was even worse.
Which would be on stupid. Yeah. I mean, $5.2 million.
The cap it isn't the most unreasonable, Drew.
It's the term.
We talk about the long-term deal. Look at Ovechkin. This is our three-year anniversary, by the way.
We forgot to mention that.
Yeah.
The 3 years we've been on air now.
And when we were
by the way, totally shocked we haven't been kicked off in 3 years.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But, we talked about it when Ovechkin signed his deal. And he's, at that point in time, he was the best player, arguably, in the league. I thought Crosby was a little better. But best player, close to it, in the league. Talk about the risk of it. What if he gets injured? Look at him right now. You still want Ovechkin, but what do you think about the last 3 years, 4 years of the deal, 5 years? So long-term deals have a risk that are, there's an inherent risk in the long-term deals. And the thing is, Drew, and that's in talking about his viability. Because of the long-term deal, I bet you there's certain teams that wouldn't be interested in him.
Probably.
So that narrows the market. How can you afford him? Are you interested in a long-term deal? Do you have the assets? There's many factors that go into a trade like that.
Well, think of your Columbus. I don't see how they can expect to get the same what they got back to what they gave.
You're admitting a mistake, though, and will you admit a mistake?
It goes back. Look, it's the same question we asked Pat Hickey.
There's a lot of pride involved here. I would give him more credit for actually making a trade for a little bit less, admitting the mistake, than holding on to him, but you don't know what's going on in the room.
Is it a huge mistake, though? This year has been a disaster. But I mean, if you have two guys, if you've got Jeff Carter...
It's a mistake in thinking that you were close enough to make them, and now you have Mishnewski, which is an immovable contract. So what's your... is there a long-term plan there?
Well, I think the plan for Scott Housen is to keep his job.
Well, but he's not going to keep his job. We don't expect
there's rumors he might keep his job.
Amazing if he does. I mean, it's astounding. But, I'm not sure that getting rid of Jeff Carter immediately is the answer either.
It might not be.
I'm not sure that, maybe...
Top-line centers don't grow on trees, but guys, he wants out, I think.
Oh, we know Jeff Carter obviously would not want to play there.
You do your due diligence to get him because he seemed disappointed to go there?
Well, I mean, because it came as a shock. He'd just been told he wasn't going to go anywhere, and then boom, a week later, he's on the move.
When you get promised you're not going to get traded...
it's usually a sign you're going to get traded.
Let's go next one.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's the most interesting one. I wouldn't be shocked to see him stay.
Neither would I. I mean, they can't come up for nothing.
No. Al Shamsky.
For sure moving.
Edmonton Oilers. He's a UFA next year.
Let's note the fact that Steve Tambellini has botched this one because he should have traded him a year ago when he had more leverage. He had more
leverage.
Leverage, and he could have got more in return.
Oh, you trade a guy with a year left on, like we talked about last week about Tobias Enstrom. If they're not going to re-sign him a year from now, trade him this year.
That's right.
I mean, it's, you know, because that way you get more for him. You get more if the team that's acquiring him has him control for a year.
One thing about Hemsky is, does that guy have a pulse? He was supposed to be one of, you know, the top young players. Yeah. He's been derailed by injuries. Can he contribute on a team, do you think? On Detroit?
Yeah, he hasn't had a good year at all in Edmonton. He's been very poor. Can he contribute? I think it's worth the risk. His skill level is off the charts, stick handling. Doesn't shoot, obviously, much. Good passer, good vision. If he'd be reinvigorated and have confidence and pull with two really talented players, I don't see why it wouldn't be worth the risk. He does not sign after this year, and you wouldn't be giving up a boatload for him.
No, it's not. It's not going to take a lot to get Al Shamsky out of Edmonton.
I don't think so.
Do you think there's any chance he signs there?
No, I think he's down there for sure.
I mean, that's just been too much baggage at this point.
Yeah, I think they're trying to move on, quote unquote, and, you know, just be Steve Tambellini's run the team into the ground and just keeps drafting players, and he wants to move on from the old.
But he's going to be a hero when after their fifth straight year of picking first or second overall.
An interesting article in the Edmonton Journal about like him being brought back and Rennie. They both don't have contracts. So it'll be interesting to see what exactly happens.
So what you're saying is you think Rennie and Tambellini may be traded at the trade deadline?
Yeah.
You can get a bag of pucks.
But, you know, I mean, I think Hemsky is probably going to get you a more of a...
Fourth round?
No, not that low. I think he's probably going to get you more of either a mid-level prospect. A high prospect, but a not too high-end. And maybe a third or second.
That much?
I think so.
Even though they're not dealing from a position of strength?
I mean, you get a little of a bidding war, and a team like LA can't score any goals, wants to make a little bit of a run. I mean, you're not going to get up a first rounder, you're not going to get up a top prospect. So to me, it's...
Second tier.
Yeah.
Second tier draft pick, second tier prospect.
Yeah, LA loading up, you know, ex-Oilers, Penner and Hemsky, it sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. Want to go to talk about Gagne?
Yeah. Well, now that he's the greatest player in the history of the NHL.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, Sam Gagne's 8-point game changes.
Look,
absolutely does not change his
shouldn't.
Trademark.
If any general manager thinks it does, then they're a fool.
Exactly.
Anybody
can score. If anything, it brings more attention to the team that's probably trying to get him, like a team like Chicago who's trying to get him for cheap, and now the other teams have led on to him. In any event, I mean, where does he fit in long term? And remember, he's only 22. I think he's in his fifth year in the league, but he's 22, 23 years old. So you're dealing with a young guy.
He's an RFA, so it's not like he's a UFA out the door.
Right. Oh, no.
Why wouldn't the Oilers try and re-sign him?
I guess, where does he fit in, Drew? What do you want to do with Taylor Hall? You have Nugent Hopkins up the middle now.
So?
Still, I mean,
Other team in the NHL builds down the middle as their strength.
Oh, obviously, Drew, it's not so much wanting to trade Gagne, although he hasn't become what they thought he'd become when they dropped him in the top 10, as much as it's you want a defenseman, and he's your best chip to get a defenseman.
Well, so
maybe it's that.
Well, I mean, what kind of...
If I'm Edmonton, I don't trade him unless I get a really good young defenseman in return. And if not, I keep him, because he's a good player. Not a great player. He's got skill.
And is he arbitration eligible?
Yes, he'll be arbitration eligible.
So, but he's not that much.
He's not going to kill you in arbitration.
No, because he's not that good.
He won't get much more than he's making right now.
I never understood this. You know, in baseball, you see it all the time. All these guys who are under control and they always get dealt. You know, these players who are under team control, but they're arbitration eligible and they always get dealt, you know, even though they're 22, 23 years old. I don't quite understand it. I mean, this is a
guy. Depends on the circumstance.
Yeah.
Tuomo Ruutu, we'll talk about after the break.
No, look at that. We're right up against the break. Why don't we do that? We'll go to break. When we come back, we'll do some more of these players, go around the NHL trade deadline coming up in a few weeks away. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also find it on the website, www.illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Continuing on with the NHL trade bait, as they like to be, the, you know, people in the know like to call them. Tuomo Ruutu of the Carolina Hurricanes has been rumored to be on the verge of leaving for the last really week or 10 days at this point. He's an UFA after the season. He's, you know, an effective player in the roles that he's usually suited for. Where would you see him going?
Well, I mean, apparently there's a big market for Tuomo Ruutu. Again, I understand it to a point, But let's not get carried away with the fact that it's going to be a guy you're going to get for a couple months. He's probably a really strong third liner. You can fill in on your second line on the wing. You're not going to want him in the middle because you need to be really strong up the middle to win these days. I think it's blown out of proportion, Remus, personally, why he's so sought after.
I think, but didn't he, when he first came into the league, he had a pretty high ceiling. Everyone thought he was, I think, going to be much better than he is. And he was traded, you know, a few years ago in exchange with Andrew Ladd.
That's right.
And I think at the time we thought that the team that got Ruutu won the deal, but it's looking like Ladd is the better player there.
Yeah, I think so. I think that you can certainly strongly make that argument that Ladd's turned into the better player. In terms of Ruutu now, he's a pending UFA, so his value is, you know, you're going to get him for a month and a bit and for the playoff run. The teams that are interested, apparently the Leafs are in on him, a lot of other teams.
Yeah. The Leafs are in on everybody.
The Leafs apparently in on everybody.
Which goes to show that they're probably in on nobody.
The Leafs for Ruutu doesn't make any sense. I mean, why do they need a guy like that? We'll talk to Jonas Siegel, TSN 1050, in a little bit from Toronto. But, when you're dealing with a guy like Tuomo Ruutu, he's never scored more than 26 goals in a season. That was in 2008.
Isn't Ruutu the kind of guy who's a missing piece on a team that's going to the Cup?
Maybe. I mean, Drew, he's rugged. He works hard. You know, he can score some goals. He can play on the power play. He's not penalty kill this year. He's not the best skater, but he works hard. I think his teammates for the most part like him. And I think he fits in? And it's difficult to pick a team that this guy really, you know, sure he'd fit in on most teams in the NHL. But was he going to push a team over the edge? And if he's not, what are you giving up for him?
Well, I mean, if the bidding gets out of control, I mean, I think people have to step back and realize Tuomo Ruutu we're talking about here.
You make a good point, though, Drew, because you look at around all the playoff teams, he fits in on every team.
Yeah.
Because he can play center, he can play wing.
Probably an upgrade over most third lines.
He's
probably one of the best third line players in the league.
If he's playing on the third line, he's not playing there.
For him to play on the third line, you're making the right trade. If you're trading for him to play on your second line,
even second line wing. You just can't be your second line center.
Right. That I can give.
Where do I think he'll end up? He's got a lot. I mean, it depends on the health of some players, too. I mean, he's got a lot of flyer in him the way he plays.
Yeah.
But you want that kind of jam, quote-unquote. What if you're Washington? You need a little more players like that, don't you? Isn't that more of a Dale Hunter type of player? Toronto just wants more.
I thought Joel Reklish was a Dale Hunter kind of player.
What about San Jose, though? Because I think that's an interesting one for Tuomo Ruutu. You look at Marty Havlat not having a great recovery from injury. Their top five right now is Marlowe, Thornton, okay? You have Couture. You have Clough, you have Pavelski.
Yeah.
When they played here, they were really missing Havlat on that second line wing. What about a guy like Ruutu? He can play on the forecheck. He can chip in a little bit of goals. You know, I still think they need a...
Who's their third line center?
Well, they generally play Hanzus there.
Yeah.
Now, they could use a third line center, too.
That's what I'm saying.
And maybe you wait on Havlat. I think he could be a winger filling in for Havlat, and then if Havlat comes back, you throw him to center. I think that's a perfect fit.
What would you give up for him? Keeping in mind, Carolina, unless there's a bidding war for him, Carolina doesn't have a ton of leverage there.
Well, I mean, there might be a bidding war for him. Again, I don't give up a first for a guy like that. And San Jose's system is poor in terms of prospects, guys. They've given them all up, really. So what do you give up? Do you give up a pick? Do you give up multiple picks? Maybe some multiple lower picks? And what are you competing with? I'm not sure if they'll... What about a younger... Do you give up one of your younger defensemen?
What did Mike Fisher get for the Senators last year?
They got a first and a conditional, too. First and a second, I think. And a conditional second if they made the conference finals, I believe it was. You're putting me on the spot there. But I think it was a first and a conditional set and a second conditional upon the playoff success being a first. So but he's also on a long-term deal.
Right.
You know, so
you're not going to give up as much to get because you don't have any control over it.
That's right.
So, I mean, you're probably talking a second rounder. And if bidding really gets going, it might be similar to
Hemsky kind of. Maybe it's, go ahead, Reem.
Oh, yeah. Fisher was a first and a conditional pick if they won two playoff series, but ended up being a first and a third.
Well, that's okay.
You're talking like close to a second and then like a prospect, but I mean, San Jose's system isn't great, so if it ends up being prospect against prospect, you'll see.
If it's a first, I mean, you're talking a first in the last probably five of the first round.
Also true.
So it's not, you know, this isn't a tremendous, like a high first round pick.
They're going to have a first. I don't think they're going to have anything else.
Just a first to get him. Do you really believe that James Van Riemsdyk of the Philadelphia Flyers is on the market?
Yeah, I kind of do, Drew. You know, the funny thing about Van Riemsdyk was, I mean, obviously he's got concussion issues now, so how available is he? But the funny thing, I want to talk about Hal Gill in a second, too, but the funny thing about Van Riemsdyk is they generally draft, and they being Philly, draft out of Major Junior.
Right.
And that was an NCAA pick.
just never really fit to their mold. He's taken longer to develop than I think they thought he would. Now he just signed a new deal.
4 years, his cap hit is $1.6 million.
Not now it is, not for the
when not
the
deal, for the new deal,
when
right.
the deal takes
his
effect.
His current one is, yeah.
So, you know, he's an up and down guy in terms of the kind of the style of play he has. He skates well. There's definitely teams that'll be willing to take on a guy like that and think he can grow further. Obviously, there's other guys in front of him. He's got a 4.2 cap hit on a long-term deal after this. So it takes him to 2018.
Yeah.
But
six years, $25.5 million.
I think when you're looking at Van Riemsdyk, you're looking at getting a big-time defenseman back because Pronger's maybe have to retire. And I think that's what you're looking for. So if you're around Riemsdyk, you better be getting a good big-time young defenseman.
Well,
I think you can do better.
Ask,
I think you can do better than Luke Shen.
Well, that's what it was going to lead to. Is Luke Shen getting you Van Riemsdyk? Because I don't think he should.
I don't think so. But what is it, Luke? What with Luke Shen do you get?
Well, let's talk about Luke Shen because he's supposedly on the market also. I mean, and to Brian Burke's credit.
Everybody should be on the market if you're them.
Yeah. You're absolutely. But to Brian Burke's credit, he said to Luke Shen, look, you might get traded. You know, I'm not going to tell you you're not going to get traded.
Give him a nice deal. He doesn't
you.
Need to apologize for anything.
No, I mean, Luke Shen is under contract. You know, he's 4 years at $3.6 million cap hit. You know, what's Luke Shen worth? These guys are all so young. They're all 22 years old. Why are you getting rid of these 22-year-olds?
Well, I mean, Drew, Toronto has a glut of defensemen.
Well, why do you re-sign John Michael Lyles?
Well, isn't that's the million-dollar question to me.
I mean, who do you
First
want?
Of all, I've never seen a guy get signed to an extension during a concussion. Is that amazing?
He's truculent. I mean, how old is John Michael Lyles? 31?
I'm very confused because how old is John Michael Lyles? I think it's 31. Remus, you want to check that? But you want to get me on a rant here about the whole John Michael Lyles thing? He's played well in Toronto this year. Don't get me wrong. Okay?
Yeah.
But you have a guy who is making a cap hit this year of 4.2, right? A 4.2 cap hit.
Yeah.
Really nobody wanted him. They were trying to give him away for a while there. Burke takes him.
Colorado was trying to get rid of him. Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
Burke takes him at 4.2. He plays well for half a season.
Yeah.
Signed him to a 4-year deal at $3.875 million. Trying to give away this guy 6 months ago.
Yeah. And he's 31 years old.
Pull up the details on that trade, Reem, if you don't mind, the John Michael Lyles trade. And how old?
He's 31 years old.
You have a glut of defensemen.
Wouldn't you rather have a 22-year-old defenseman than a 31-year-old defenseman? John Michael Lyles is not a difference maker. He's a nice offensive upside, but he's not a difference maker.
No, he's not a difference maker. I agree.
I mean,
and you got Phaneuf. Gardner can move the puck. Younger guy. Cody Franzen can move the puck. So, guys, I understand a guy like Lyles who can skate, move the puck is valuable. Reem, go ahead.
It was Lyles for a second-round pick.
Which was a salary dump by Colorado.
Yeah.
I mean, Colorado salary dumped him. And, I mean, and everybody's praising Brian Burke because he's able to re-sign this guy. Oh, it's less money than he currently makes. If you're John Michael Lyles, you take the guaranteed $15.5 million, say thank you very much, and go on your merry way.
And look at this. Look at this. If you look at their cap hit for the year 2000, they have a ton of UFA space, so you watch out for them in a couple of years. 2013 and 14, they have Phil Kessel signed and Mike Brown signed. They have nobody else at forward. Their defense, though?
Yeah.
$11 million locked up in Phaneuf and Komisarek that year. Okay?
Yeah.
And then another
$7.5 million on Lyles and Shen.
That's right.
If Shen's still going to be there.
So.
I mean, I just doesn't make it. Wouldn't you rather not re-sign John Michael Lyles or sign him to a 1-year deal or a 2-year deal and see if Luke Shen, when he turns 22, 23, 24, maybe is a bit of, not that he's even that
they're
much of a late
they're
bloomer.
They're different types of players.
I know, but wouldn't you rather see what you have in a 23-year-old Luke Shen than get John Michael Lyles when he's 34 years old?
It's also odd that you tie your hands a little bit with your salary-wise moving forward before the trade deadline. You don't see what's out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
it was an odd contract. But Toronto's moving sideways.
Well, at least they're consistent in that.
Yeah.
They consistently move sideways with no plan
in
place.
True.
You mentioned Grabowski. You know,
well, that's another thing, Drew.
I mean,
Grabowski, what's he going to get on the free agent? What's he going to get on the free agent market? But that's a guy you'd give more money to than a guy like Lyles, right? Like, I don't know if they're.
Grabowski has been. I mean, it's hard to say he's been more valuable than Kessel this year.
No. I mean, Kessel and Lupo have been their most the most valuable. Grabowski's getting going lately. Grabowski is a very talented player, and he plays center on a team that
You know, guys like Connolly, Lombardi, they're not long for Toronto.
Yeah.
Is Grabowski long for Toronto? But yeah, he's a guy who will get a nice contract on the free agent market, guys.
Should.
Playing better defensively. He's a good player.
I mean, you know, and you got Tim Connolly under contract for next year at $4.75 million. Tim Connolly done for this team.
I'm just saying you're aggravated by the decisions they're making. Can we talk about Hal Gill? Because that's a guy I think would be a big market for.
Well, Hal Gill, you know what he's getting for
him. What about San Jose again? We talk about San Jose. Okay?
Yeah.
But you have a team like San Jose. Poor penalty killing, which you talked about Randy Hahn. We talked about that. This guy can help your penalty kill. He's like a one-man penalty killing machine.
He's a truck.
Hal Gill, oh man.
He's so big.
Yeah, he had serious. I mean, you have Brent Burns, you have Dan Boyle, so you have your right side. I mean, obviously you have Doug Murray, and he's similar to Doug Murray in that way, in terms of a bigger guy, a little bit slower.
Don't they already have Colin White? Like, would you want to have Colin White and Hal Gill?
But yeah, you push Colin White to the press box. You have Jason DeMers. You have guys who can move the puck. I think he'd look great if you want to really solidify your top six and then log special team minutes for guys like Burns and Boyle. And log him big time on the power play and maybe even strength. Gill would be a great fit there, too. Gill would be a great fit almost everywhere, though. He's a guy who fits into your locker room, fits into your roster. I mean, you can look through every team in the National Hockey League right now, and I tell you most of them would want Hal Gill.
Well, it's cliche, but he's a pro's pro.
He's a pro's pro.
I mean, he's definitely, yes. But it's very much cliche. But, you know, sometimes it fits. You know, he can move from city to city, and he often does year after year right now. I mean, he's been in Montreal for a couple years now, but, I mean, he's a guy who's moved at the trade deadline. I wonder how many times, because everybody wants him at the trade deadline.
He's Boston, and Toronto,
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, Montreal.
He's on the Stanley Cup team in Pittsburgh.
That's right.
I mean, when you're wanted at the trade deadline each and every time you're available, it's a pretty good sign that you're the kind of guy who teams need and want in their dressing room.
True. The thing about Hal Gill is he fits in almost everywhere.
Yeah.
And you know, does he? What about a team like? I mean, they don't. What about a team like Vancouver?
Well, I mean, you have
Bieksa on the right side. I mean, you have a guy like Edler who's looking great, but Salo's not always reliable, obviously, in terms of health. Do you want to go again with Alberts in Rome for the playoffs? Keith Ballard, they don't trust. He would round out their top four. I like him. I mean, again, you basically like him everywhere, but I think Montreal could get a nice little haul for him.
Sure.
Start a little bidding war.
Might as well start it now. I mean, it's the thing.
It's also another thing, Drew. These guys wait so long. I know everybody works on a deadline, but the trade deadline is February 27th, and the season ends, what, April 8th?
April 7th. Well, 7th. Jets' last game is April 7th.
April 7th. So
probably April 8th.
So you're literally getting a guy for a month and a week.
Yeah.
And you're going to give up that. I mean, the trade deadline needs to be pushed up.
No, you trade for the guy now.
That's also true.
You trade for the guy now. That way you get him for 3 weeks before the trade deadline. He's off the market. He gets acclimatized. And you get him for an extra, what do you get him for, an extra 12 games?
Such a small sample size for the last month of the season. Like, what happens if your team really outshoots guys and they don't play well? I mean, it's exactly, you're dealing with a lot of risk, right?
You get him now, you get him for an extra 10 games.
True.
I'd rather have him for an extra 10 games. And so, I mean, what do you have to, so, and you avoid getting fleeced in the market, you know? If it's going to cost you a second round pick, you trade for him now and you get him for the
make
for
a
the
solid extra
offer.
Weeks. Now you see it's on the table after this.
Exactly right. I mean, that, you know, that's exactly what it is. Anyways, let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. Some programming notes for you tomorrow morning, special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Here on TSN 1290, we'll talk the Super Bowl, we'll talk the Jets-Habs, well, who knows whatever else we'll get into trouble about. Myself and Paul Edmonds started off 10 a.m. leading into Rick Ralph with the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 12 noon. And next Saturday, it's going to be an early start. Not yet sure if it's going to be 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. for us, but we'll decide that this week. Either way, an early start with the Jets playing the early afternoon game in Pittsburgh on Hockey Day in Canada next Saturday. So we'll get started bright and early as well. Just want to mention a good program. Santa Lucia Pizza is teaming up with Pass It Forward, the hockey equipment program we're very familiar with. Great program. Tomorrow is a Santa Lucia Pizza game day here on TSN 1290. So any pizza... Any pizza that is ordered from Santa Lucia, some proceeds of it will go to the Pass It Forward program. So if you're looking around and you want to order a pizza for the game, either the Jets game or the Super Bowl tomorrow, and you order it from Santa Lucia, some of the proceeds from that sale get to go to the Pass It Forward program. Great hockey equipment program. Collects equipment so that those underprivileged youth might be able to get into the game. As we know, hockey equipment is really quite expensive and something the NHL really, I think, needs to do more about in order to try and reduce that cost.
That's a good point.
There's a lot of costs with minor hockey.
It really is. I mean, ice time and equipment, Drew, and exactly. The sticks are very expensive. And I mean, I remember we played, the sticks were like $15-$20. Now they're like $200.
Well, that's all. It's ridiculous that there's kids playing with $200 sticks.
It's very common too.
I know it's common because all the kids want to do. They want to get the sticks that their heroes use. I understand it.
I know when I was growing up, but I would always, look at the expensive sticks and want to get them.
Back then, it was the Gretzky aluminum stick for when I was still playing hockey.
You mean like 1950s wooden sticks with like Howie Morenz?
That's right, exactly right. That's precisely what I meant. Exactly what I meant. Thanks for making that. Thanks for
It was a Gretzky silver aluminum and the Brett Hall gold aluminum. Those were the big ones.
That's right.
And the ultralight came in the Paul Kariya and stuff like that, and the Lindros Bauer, which wasn't a bad price because it was the wood still.
Yeah. I mean, and those are tremendously expensive.
Yeah, so, they don't really have wooden sticks, they're
not even just wood anymore. It's like wood combined with fiberglass and all this other stuff. It's like $40, I think, the cheapest stick, like 30, 40 bucks.
It's expensive. I mean, and when you're playing on a team and all your teammates have the fancy sticks, you don't want to be the kid with the less expensive stick. So that's something I think
you should give the best player in the team the cheapest stick and then see what the other kids do.
Yeah, well,
that should be New Hockey Canada's new mandate. Go through, pick out the best kid, give them the cheapest stick, and everybody will want the cheapest stick.
Well, because they want to mimic those who have the most talent. That's always how it works. I mean, it's straightforward.
It's an expensive thing, so it's a good cause.
Exactly. So you can try and support that tomorrow if you get the chance. That'll be tomorrow on Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day here on TSN 1290. I want to talk about the LA clock stoppage thing.
Oh, yes.
Shady.
Really shady. Eh? In case you missed it, and I'm not, the Kings and the Blue Jackets were tied late in the third period of a game. Was it Wednesday night? I think it was Wednesday night.
Yes, Wednesday night.
The Kings had a power play in the last seconds of the game, and they scored with 0.4 seconds on the game clock.
Or so they'd have you believe.
Well, what happened was, and the TV replays confirm it, is that the clock mysteriously stopped for about a second. And then it restarted, and it was only because that clock stopped that there was still time left in the period that allowed the Kings to score that goal. Do you think there was something mischievous underfoot, or do you think it's just an innocent accident?
I think it's probably an innocent accident, Drew, but I do think that needs to have been dealt with prior to the teams leaving the ice. I mean, why is the NHL back at home in Toronto? Why is somebody not in the arena not noticing? There's somebody made a mistake.
The Blue Jackets noticed it because you can see that the goal goes in and Steve Mason immediately points up to the clock and says the clock stopped. So they definitely noticed it, but they reviewed the goal because it was so bang bang right up against the buzzer. So you're right. That's what I wanted to know, is why didn't the NHL immediately, say something, do something, make a ruling? I can sort of understand, not completely though, sort of understand not going back and changing the result, but as they were reviewing the goal, somebody should have said something. Somebody has to make an executive decision and say, whoa, this is after the end of the period should have been.
And that's one of those cases where you're watching a game at home and you see it on TV and you say, this is wrong, this can't happen. It happens in football all the time. You say, why can't they just go and review this play? But no, you, for whatever reason, it's not reviewable.
It's a fair point. It's also interesting, I want to compare it to the NBA. The NBA's had a couple circumstances. I think they both happened in Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they did.
Where they restarted a game, like the game had ended, and then a team filed a protest, and they won the protest. And the NBA ruled, we're going to go back and we're going to replay the last, 5.5 minutes of this game based on where the protest or the offending incident occurred. Should the NHL have retroactively gone back and changed this? Should they have done something to change the outcome of this, even after the fact?
That's a really interesting question. I've kind of wavered back and forth on what to do about it. The right thing to do probably would be, I'm not sure if LA and Columbus play each other again this year, but why not play that at the beginning of the game, play it the overtime? Why not play in overtime again? And what's the issue? I mean, obviously, if it's in LA or in Columbus, there's going to be a little bit of an issue there. I can understand that you don't want to go back and play it, but it's every game, and there's an NHL home, NFL doesn't have that. NFL, they review the plays in the stadium, right? NHL has a building. You've seen it with all the
Central
games.
Command station.
Central Command. Yeah. Why is Central Command not noticing that? What are they doing if that's not their job? If that's not what Mike Murphy is doing, then what's going on there?
very true point. I mean, there's constant communication between the NHL, the arena, the off ice officials in the arena, and central office. You know, the war room, as they like to call it. So you're right. Why? Whose call would that be to make? I wonder if the problem is there's nobody.
I can tell you. Colin Campbell's talking about it, and you know, you give you a bunch of NHL speak, and then nothing happens.
Well, I wonder if the problem is there's nobody that really has the authority to make that call. Maybe there's nobody in the war room. It's probably the last
game.
You
call into the arena and say there's a clock malfunction. They call back down to the refs.
No, I'm saying there's nobody in the NHL who probably has there's nobody in the war room at that point in time at that point in the night, because it's, you know, the last game of the night probably, given that it's in the West Coast, an LA game. There might not be anybody in the war room who has the authority to, you know, turn back the time almost.
You don't think that they have an official with the authority to do that there?
Not that much authority. Watching the clock.
Then who's there? What are they doing in that room?
I'm not disputing that. I mean, I'm speculating that. I mean, whose decision would that be to make? Let's say we know that the clock actually stopped. We can see it here. I have the authority to go back. You know, I'm Gary Bettman. I have the authority to say, no, that goal doesn't count. The clock stopped rightly or wrongly.
Well, here, they play again. March 8th.
Where?
In Columbus.
Okay.
Well, so what you're talking about, an overtime period, so it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
So they can play one period. I think the bottom line here with instant replay is you have all this technology in place and all these rules to make sure that the correct ruling happens. I think it's just a lot easier for them to do nothing and hope it goes away. But you'd like to think, you know, there's probably going to be a lot of media speculation around that game now. Why not just play in overtime?
Apparently,
that'd be the right thing to do.
That would be the right thing to do.
They're not going to admit a mistake. These leagues don't admit mistakes for the most part.
Well, but they admitted there was a mistake.
I realize, but they admitted it and then didn't do anything about it.
Yeah. Do you think, you know,
it's not a goal in the middle of the game that allowed a team has a chance to come back from. I mean, there's 0.4
seconds at the end of the game. There's no, I mean,
like, Columbus doesn't benefit from it, but what happens to LA? They get the 2 points. What happens if LA gets 1 point? What happens if LA makes the playoffs by 1 point?
Well, Jay Feaster took the high road on it and said, you know what, you know, because Calgary and LA are battling there, but Jay Feaster took the high road and said, you know, it is what it is. But I mean, there's a lot of teams that it affects that aren't playing in that game. I mean,
the NHL is holding its breath that it doesn't come down to 1 point. I think we can agree on that. It doesn't mean they wouldn't have won the game. They might have won in overtime. They might have won the shootout, but they didn't win
in regulation.
In a legal fashion, really.
They didn't win in regulation, yeah, right. And they were awarded. I mean, they got a free 2 points.
They were going to get 1 point anyways. They got a free 1 point.
Well, that's right. If this wasn't Columbus.
Oh, also true. If this wasn't Columbus, what if it was Calgary in LA?
Or what if it was Detroit in LA?
Also true.
If this was Detroit playing in LA, do you think that they do this or not?
I think they probably don't. In more important news,
yeah,
Ezzie Ginsberger is requesting to come on next segment.
Should we let him on?
We'll let him on.
Okay. Why don't we go to break then, and we'll talk to Ezzy. He's live in La Belle Provence in Montreal for the Jets-Habs game. When we come back, Ezzy Ginsberg, live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joining us on the line now from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, the one and only Ezzy Ginsberg. Ezzy, we miss you.
Drew, I miss you guys, too. It's great to come on. I've been listening to the show. You guys are doing an awesome job, as usual. It's kind of weird, though. I gotta be honest. I don't think I've listened to the show this much on the radio. I think I did it once when I was sick, but it's kind of weird not being there with you guys.
It's not the same in the studio. Remus is doing a pitiful job trying to fill your shoes, I must say.
I say Remus is doing a good job. Ezzy, but you are dearly missed.
The comedy quotient on the show is way down.
Yes, that's for sure.
I mean,
I appreciate it. Remus is doing an awesome job.
Yeah,
I actually BBM'd him, and I think I tweeted it too. I want to hear more of Remus, because Remus is doing an awesome job. He takes no backseat to me.
More Remus, less cowbell.
Are you excited for tomorrow's Jets-Habs game, Ezzy?
I am excited. I'm staying here with our friend Adam, and his brother just got into town. He's going to be coming to the game with us. We're going to be going with Kellen, Adam's fiance. So there's going to be a good contingent. Ari Baum-Cohen is coming.
Illegal Curve gambling expert, of course. Yeah.
Yep. So there's going to be a good contingent of Winnipeg fans. It's going to be lots of fun. And the game against the Capitals is just winding up here.
Yeah.
They're down by one goal.
So yeah.
Back-to-back afternoon games. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it because, as you guys remember, the last time the Jets played the Habs, it was a big blowout. So it's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, as you heard, it's a game that we've determined as a must-win for the Jets if they want to have any designs at actually making a playoff run here.
Yeah, it's a must-win, and you can make the argument that they're all must-wins until they officially put themselves out of the playoff race, but they made it a little bit easier on themselves winning the first two games of the road trip, and obviously yesterday was disappointing, but it's a must-win, and I think it's a must-win based on, the, like I said before, the way they played in Montreal last time. They've had two stinkers against Montreal this season, and I know they weren't happy with the game earlier this month, so they got to win them all, Drew. I mean, with you know, 30 games left, 29 or 30 games left, you've got to win most of them. It's really not, there isn't a lot of room for error.
Agreed wholeheartedly. And of course, if anybody wants to keep up to date on your, you know, what you're actually doing in Montreal, you've been updating your Twitter feed nonstop at ICSEG.
Yeah, I've been doing a little tweeting.
Is there some Schwartz's coming up later on today at some point?
I don't know if we're going to go to Schwartz's. you know, for everyone that doesn't know out there, I like my deli meat. We might go to Schwartz's. We're going to go for pizza later at a place called Napolitan, which is renowned for their pizza. So if I do go to Schwartz's before that, my blood cholesterol level will be even higher than it already is. So I'll have to let you know. Schwartz's is amazing, though.
Yes, we. You want to stick with us for rapid fire, Izzy?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, let's go to rapid fire.
Rapid fire.
The New York Islanders announced that they're going to play an exhibition game in Brooklyn, New York. Site of the there's a new arena going there. The New Jersey Nets are moving to Brooklyn. What are the chances? Do you think there's a possibility that the New York Islanders will become the Brooklyn Bronxers? Brooklyn what? Brooklyn Boroughs? I mean, I don't know.
The chances that the Islanders become the Brooklyn Islanders, I don't know. Can Jay-Z own a basketball team and a hockey team? I'm not too sure about it. Maybe that's the question. But they definitely need a new arena, so I guess anything's possible in New York. It's pretty ugly there.
Yeah, you know, we were in the Long Island. They have good fans. They don't have a lot of people at the games, but they do have hockey fans when they're there. I was reading a little bit more about this. The Brooklyn Arena would actually only have 14,500 seats for hockey.
So we know that's not that far from working.
Right, I know. And the question also is, if you have a successful franchise in New York, you might be able to sell 18, 19. But I kind of like that idea. But at the same time, Long Island, it has a tradition there. I mean, you have such an odd ownership, and the guy who just, who knows what he's doing there. So I think there's some positives, but also some negatives. And, you know, you say it's not losing a team because we're in New York, but that's still a far distance from the Long Island fans. The one advantage, apparently, is that you can get to this new arena through mass transit. Whereas, as we know, if you're in Manhattan getting to Long Island, you have to take the train out and then cab.
Yeah.
So it's a long trek, and you really have to be a good hockey fan to do it.
It's also leverage. I mean, more than anything,
he's been using everything as leverage. Yeah. Kansas City, this and that. I mean,
well, it's, you know, a little closer to home leverage, at least, than Kansas City or Seattle. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out there.
I'd just like to see them keep the name Islanders, even if they're in Brooklyn. Who cares? I mean, the Utah Jazz kept the name Jazz.
I somehow don't think they're going to become the Brooklyn Dodgers again. That's the only problem there.
Well, guys, what about this? If Jay-Z's buying the New Jersey Nets, maybe Kanye West should buy the New York Islanders.
Taylor Swift can be a partner of his.
Exactly.
That's good thinking, Izzy.
Get all those Grammy winners in there.
Next topic. Marek Zdlicky went on a bit of a rant about his relationship with the Minnesota Wild head coach Mike Yeo. What is Marek Zdlicky really bringing to the table now, and why aren't the Wild using him?
Well, Marek Zdlicky is a strictly offensive defenseman, and obviously in Minnesota everything's going south and has been going south for a long time. I mean, he's valuable. He's been around the league for a while. Minnesota has much bigger problems than just Marek Zdlicky, sounding off on the coach. But, he can still be a serviceable defenseman, and he brings some offense. He's obviously not putting up the numbers like he was earlier in his career, but, I mean, he's still got a place in the NHL, I'd say.
You know, I agree. I agree completely. I actually have to sympathize somewhat with Marek Zdlicky here, and I don't know him personally, meaning I don't know if he's a guy who's not great in the locker room, he is or isn't. But in terms of the style of play Minnesota employs, it's boring. Mike Yeo takes a lot out of the team in terms of their creativity. You know, I understand the fact that Marek Zdlicky was brought in to be an offensive defenseman, and he's being severely limited in his ability to do so, and that severely limits his effectiveness. So it's very much like, are you going to coach the team to its talents, or are you going to, you know, employ a system that allows you to utilize your team, you know, your most offensively proficient players. So I think that Zdlicky has a place in the NHL. Moving the puck, moving defensemen do not grow on trees, and the Minnesota system is very boring. It's very structured, and I think he has flourished before in Nashville, which was a structured system. I think it's maybe even be more structured, and I think Barry Trotz let him be a little more Zdlicky than Yo is. I have to give Zdlicky a little bit of a
more power here. And I think a team should be interested in him going to the playoffs.
You know, it sounds to me very similar situation that was going on with Kyle Turris in Phoenix with Dave Tippett.
Mm-hmm.
And then when
he's moved
to a Paul McLean system, he has produced more offensively.
Good point.
Last question here on Rapid Fire before we let you go, Ezzy. Brian Burke versus Don Cherry. Brian Burke says Don Cherry picks on his team.
And his coach.
And his coach. And Don Cherry claims that Brian Burke has complained to the CBC about it. Is there a right? Is there a person who's in the right to a person who's in the wrong, or do you just not care?
I mean, it's tough because everyone in Canada really gives it to the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's definitely not Don Cherry. I think, if anything, Don Cherry has been pretty good with the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's obviously based in Ontario, and he's usually pretty kind to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, Brian Burke, he's interesting. He's very outgoing, and he's not afraid to speak his mind. I think that he has a lot more to focus on right now, and that's the playoff race. I think he needs to take it easy a little bit, chill out, and not get too defensive every time somebody says anything.
Yep.
I mean, if you've ever been in Western Canada, it's basically the Toronto Maple Leafs are the brunt of everybody's jokes for not making the playoffs and not winning the Stanley Cup in 40 years or whatever. So I think everyone needs to relax and realize it's just hockey. I mean, Ilya Bryzgalov said it best, right?
You know what? Brian Burke is getting defensive. I agree, Ezzy, first of all, that the fact that he needs to not care about that because he needs to care about building a good team, and his team, I think, has made some good moves, but I think overall is moving sideways as usual. But you know what? Don Cherry, if anything, is an apologist for the Toronto Maple Leafs. The fact that he is calling out Ron Wilson, who, to me, has done a very poor job there in, I guess, 4 years now that he's been there, is the truth. And him telling us that Ron Wilson, and you can disagree with a lot of what Don Cherry says, but him telling us that Ron Wilson has been doing a good job in Toronto would be a lie. And so he says he's been doing a poor job, and he doesn't like the way he calls out players. I think that's more of his issue. In any event, Ron Wilson did not deserve a contract extension, he's done a poor job in Toronto. The team's always last in certain categories. And, I mean, Brian Burke hasn't given him the best teams, but I have no issue at all with Don Cherry calling it as it is.
Honestly, who really cares?
Also true.
Fair enough. I was leaning to who really cares also. It's just noise and a distraction.
Like this, and why is he complaining to the CBC? They're on national TV every week, and they put out a terrible product.
That's a fair point. Ezzy, we'll let you go on that.
Good
on that,
that really is a terrible product every week.
Ezzy, before we let you go, just...
The Leafs, not the broadcast.
Yeah, the Leafs. Good broadcast.
Gary Lawless tweets at Illegal Curve. Cheers and jeers. Jeers for Ezzy. Why? Just because.
I love it. I'll take it. Just because it's from Gary, I'll take it. But, guys, thanks for having me on. And enjoy the last segment. I can't wait to get back. We have the Leafs and Jets on Tuesday back in the press box, so I can't wait to be back in Winnipeg.
Hey, and we're on air tomorrow morning also, so you can tune in tomorrow to hear me and Paul Edmonds, exactly. Ezzy, have a good trip. Travel safe.
Thank you. Have a good show, guys.
Bye, Ezzy. Let's go to break. When we come back, Jonas Siegel from TSN 1050 in Toronto is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome our colleague from TSN Radio 1050 in Toronto, Jonas Siegel. Welcome to the program.
How's it going, guys?
Doing very well. I believe you're in Ottawa for the Leafs Sens game. Is that right?
I am. And for once, like, we in the media love to build up these Leafs Senators games. But, guys, this actually is a game that actually means something. You look at the standings and you look at the Leafs and Sens. The Leafs are 3 points back of the Sens with three games in hand. So this game is actually pretty important. And for the Leafs, they're coming off a couple pretty good games against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So they're really in for a test tonight against the Sens club that's lost five straight. So this is actually a big game.
Also worth noting, off topic for the game itself, but I believe it's a mental health awareness game in Ottawa tonight. So I think people are encouraged to wear purple in support of Luke Richardson's daughter.
Yes, that's right.
I believe that's completely off topic, so I'll just leave that one there. Jonas, really, let's boil it down. Ron Wilson got that contract extension a couple of months ago. We all sort of scratched our heads and said, why? Is it playoffs or bust for Ron Wilson and the Toronto Maple Leafs?
It's going to be something close to those lines for Ron Wilson. I think a lot of people were surprised at the timing of the contract extension. It came right around Christmas. Ron Wilson sent out a tweet, which kind of upset some people in the media, but nonetheless, that's the way Ron Wilson likes to roll. But, you know, if he's four straight seasons out of the playoffs, it's going to be tough for Brian Burke to sell that kind of future to his bosses. But I think if you look at this club and you look for the first time in Burke's mind, they have the talent to compete for the playoffs. They have the talent necessary for Ron Wilson to win. So it's going to be interesting. This is a club that still needs to get a little bit bigger in terms of size up front, but they've made a lot of strides this year. Phil Kessel and Joffre Lupo being point A and point B in terms of two players stepping up and joining the elite of the NHL. But if they don't make the playoffs, it's going to be, the city's probably going to explode because people have just been waiting and waiting and waiting for this team to kind of round into form where they can be considered a legitimate playoff contender year in, year out. They're close, but they're right in that mix, and it's going to take a real dogfight right to game 82 for them to actually get in because they're right in that cusp. You know, they're right there with the Jets, the Jersey Devils, the Panthers, go down the list, the Capitals. There's quite a few teams in that mix. Are they good enough? We'll have to see because, you know, there have been stretches where they've been quite good, like the new year, but then there have been stretches like the month of December where they've really struggled.
Jonas, John Michael Lyles acquired Brian Burke from Colorado in the offseason. A guy that Colorado was really had high hopes for and then kind of was trying to give away near the end, comes to Toronto. At $4.2 million this year, and then they give him an extension for $3.875 for the next 4 years, is he worth that kind of money for that term?
He is, and you know, he probably could have gotten more on the open market just as a puck-moving defenseman who can give you a lot of offense, but when you look at what he's been able to do, guys, to this blue line, they're a very young defense. You know, you look at the six guys dressing tonight, they've got Dion Phaneuf is really the only vet aside from John Michael Lyles. They've got Luke Shen, Jake Gardner, Carl Gunnarsson, Cody Franzen, and all these guys 25 or under. So they get a guy like Lyles, and they just love his experience, and they love the way he moves the puck. You know, he's a real good guy to jumpstart their offense. He's really helped their power play, which is top 10 in the NHL, after finishing in the bottom half of the league last year. So he's just brought a lot of intangibles to the table, and he's really liked playing in Toronto, playing in a real hockey market. He's from Indianapolis, where obviously football is king, and they really love their football down there, and obviously their college basketball as well. So he's liked playing this market, but overall, guys, they've just liked the stability he's brought to their blue line. He really helps their attack in terms of an offense that's sixth best in the NHL. So he's just brought a lot of little things to the table. 4 years might have been a little bit long for a guy who's 31, but the way that they see it, he's just such a solid pro that they're willing to take the chance. And, you know, he's in good shape. He's one of those mobile puck-moving guys. So the fact that he'll be 35 when the contract ends, I don't think they think is too big a deal.
Jonas, the Leafs sent Nazem Kadri back to the minors earlier this week. Tell me how they can still salvage this situation and make the most of this former first-round pick.
Well, it becomes a real point of frustration for Leaf fans, but I honestly, I'm one of the rare minority who thinks this is how it's supposed to work, and he's just not ready. You know, guys, that when he first got called up a little bit earlier this season, he looked terrific. For four games, he had 3 points. He looked like an NHL player. He was making smart plays with the puck. You could see that offensive skill really creating for some of his teammates, and then the offense started to dip, and by the time he was sent down, he had 2 points in 12 games, and for a guy who has so much skill, you've got to produce. You've got to put points on the board, and he just wasn't doing it. He was getting 14, 15 minutes a night, and they're trying to compete for the playoffs, and they get Colby Armstrong, a veteran guy, back from injury, so he gets right back in the lineup, and it's just not the right time yet. He's not ready, and if he's not ready, they're not going to force-feed him into the lineup. You know, you look at this club in Toronto the last few years, and there have been spots where they've had to plug young players maybe into situations that they're not ready for, but because they're that much deeper in terms of their forward core this year, they don't have to force Kadri. If he's not ready, he's not ready. They'll just keep plugging along, and at some point in the future, you hope that he finds a way to gain some consistency and bring that offense to the table on a more consistent basis.
Michael Grabowski's been a godsend, obviously, last year. This year he struggled a bit to begin with. He's been playing a lot better recently. What's the future for Grabowski in Toronto?
Well, that's probably the most interesting scenario right now for the Leafs. You know, a lot of people like to throw his name onto the trade block because he is an unrestricted free agent after the year. But he's their best center, and it's not even close. You know, you look at the offense that he produces, he's on pace for 30 goals and 60 points. And he's really brought a lot to the table in the last month and a half. He's shifty. He's skilled. He's kind of got a little bit of the Canadian tenacity in his game. You know, he's feisty. Mm-hmm. So he brings a lot of different elements to the table. And this is a guy that they had really high hopes for just based on the season he had last year. He had 29 goals and 58 points alongside Nikolai Kuhlman and Clark MacArthur on what was easily their best line. And that unit really struggled to start the season. They couldn't really find that chemistry that they had last year. But over these last three or four games, that unit in particular has really started to get it going. So that's a really important situation for the Leafs to monitor. But Grabowski is an unrestricted free agent. He is going to command something, you'd think, in the neighborhood of $4 or $5 million a year. The Leafs will have to decide if that's something they're willing to pay, especially with the cap likely to go down and all the uncertainty surrounding the next collective bargaining agreement.
Jonas, last question here. Deadline's coming up February 27th. What are the Leafs looking for, and what are their assets to deal?
Well, they're looking for a big, strong power forward who can contribute some offense, and I think a lot of teams are looking for that, and they're not easy to find. You know, to find those big guys with skill, you look at their forward group right now, and they have a lot of similar players just in terms of size and skill set. Mm-hmm. So they want someone who's big and who can help them score a little bit. And what they have a lot to offer is defensemen. They have a lot of NHL-quality defensemen in their system. Right now, Mike Komisarek, who's a veteran guy, he's sitting. He's sitting for the second consecutive game as a healthy scratch tonight in Ottawa. So they have bodies to move on their blue line. It's just a matter of finding that personality and that player, a young player to help them up front, and it's going to be a challenge. You know, Brian Burke has made it clear that he wants to add a player with size to help them offensively a little bit, but they're not going to go out there and add a rental player. They want someone young who they can build with. It's just a matter of finding that player, but Burke is going to try as hard as he can bet on that.
Jonas Siegel, TSN 1050 in Toronto, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the Sens-Leafs game, and Tuesday night, Leafs at Jets in another really an important game for playoff positioning once again.
We'll see you there. Bye.
Thanks, Jonas. Take care. That was Jonas Siegel, TSN 1050, our colleague in Toronto. He's in Ottawa for tonight's Leafs-Sens game, as I mentioned.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock, you're going to do the honors.
We are going to do a joint cheer today. Everybody in the room here, Timmy, Remus, Drew and I, and of course for Izzy in Montreal, we're going to give a cheer out to Richard Tapper from On the Sidelines. You know him from this show, The Doc and the Jock. He is on during the week with Obi Khan during the season. He's going through a difficult time right now. We're going to give him a group cheer.
Absolutely.
He's going to get through this time, right? I think we're all confident in that, and there's no better person able to fight through something that this difficult. And we're giving him a group cheer. No need to be any jeers today. And we're looking forward to him being in our studio pretty soon to talk about being back on the...
That's right. Back on the sidelines. Yes. Exactly right. Exactly. Can't say it better than that, Richie. Wholeheartedly agree with you there. Cheers from everybody here at Legal Curve and Timmy and everybody really listening to Dr. Richard Tapper 100%. That's it for this Saturday afternoon. Programming notes, next Saturday, early start, either 7 a.m. or 8 a.m.
We'll
tweet it out. Follow us on Twitter, at Legal Curve. You'll see it there. Another programming note, I'm on tomorrow morning, myself and Paul Edmonds. Special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10 a.m. here on TSN 1290. We'll talk Super Bowl. We'll talk Jets Habs. Right after us, Hustler and Lawless from Indianapolis. They're going to recap their week in Indy on Radio Row. I'm sure to stay tuned to the station for that. Big thank yous to Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post, Jonas Siegel from TSN 1050 in Toronto. Big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, The Cheer Bar and Grill, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. If you've missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. For Richard Pollock, Michael Remus, producer Tim, and Ezzy Ginsberg, if it's Saturday, it's Illegal Curve Hockey.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.